So this is all joint work with Christoph Greu. So I will start with a little bit of notation and motivation. So E over QP is a finite extension of cube extension, and its residue field is little k, finite extension of FP. And the hope is that one day we'll have a periodic Langmuir correspondence which maybe takes something like the following shape. It goes from continuous representations of the Galois group of QP, of this Galois group, GLNE should be in some sort of correspondence with certain admissible unitary Banach space representations. Of GLN QP over E. And I will denote this correspondence by rho going to, this hypothetical correspondence by rho goes to pi of rho. And there's a corresponding mod P Langlands, mod P version, which should arise by reducing lattices on both sides modulo the uniformizer, which we get by replacing E on both sides by the residue field K, and by replacing unitary Banach, by smooth, which is what we get when we reduce a unit ball in the Banach space. But so at the moment one doesn't know very much. For n equals 1, that's classical theory, but for n equals 2, due to the work of many people, I will only mention some of them: Roy, Colmes, Vascunas, and Emerton, which gives a, who gave a compatibility, a global, local global compatibility statement for the correspondence. So in this case, I just want to briefly recall some very rough qualitative shape of the correspondence. So there are two possibilities for a Galois representation. On the left, it can be irreducible or reducible, and if we take it, so E is really sufficiently large, but let's assume rho is absolutely irreducible. Then the corresponding representation, either in the chiaric or in the mod P version, is supercuspidal. So it doesn't arise in non-trivial parabolic inductions. And on the other hand, pi can be reducible, let's say, it's an extension of two characters, two Galois characters, chi1 and chi2. In this case, pi of rho is an extension of two principal series representations. So I will recall that because that will play a role in the rest of the talk. So I take the induction from the lower triangle of Borel of the characters corresponding QP cross characters, chi1 still denoted by chi1 and chi2. But one has to normalize like this. So it's chi1 epsilon inverse chi2, pi rho, and then a similar induction where the characters are interchanged. And here, epsilon is the cyclotomic character. And And so the extension on the left can be split and non-split, and similarly it can be split or non-split on the right-hand side, and generically both extension classes are one-dimensional, and they correspond to each other. Sorry? I don't want what? This is generic. So. Yeah, it's always generic. But when n is greater than 2, we don't really know. So the goal of this talk is to sort of look at the case when rho is, as in this second case, so when rho is ordinary, by which we mean upper triangular, describe at least a piece of this representation, pi of rho. So describe a sub-representation of pi of rho, and give evidence that this is a reasonable. So describe a sort of conjecturally describe a sub-representation and give evidence that it should be there. So we'll start by giving a description of this sub-representation, which we denote by pi rho ord, and this should equally work in the mod p and the PID case, and in order to simplify notations, I will work in the mod p setting. So this works, I mean, being able to define this, this works equally well in the mod p and PID setting. So here's a little bit of notation. B is t times u is the upper triangular Borel. In the group we consider, which is GLN of QP. Well, yeah, it also works for some more general groups, but I will stick to GLN for this talk. And B bar is the opposite, the lower triangular Borel. And W is the normalizer, I mean, it's the Y group, so it's normalizer of torus modulo torus, which is just a symmetric group on n letters. Sorry? No. And now let's fix rho, a homomorphism from the Galois group of QP to the upper triangular Borel over our coefficient field little k, the finite field, just as a homomorphism. And assume it's of the just introduce notation, assume it's of the form, the diagonal characters are of the form chi1 up to chin. And we make the following two assumptions. Assume, first of all, a genericity assumption. There will always be a genericity assumption in, so for the whole talk, basically, so I, by which we mean chi I chi j inverse is not contained in 1 or epsilon plus minus 1 for all I not equal to j. And so this is precisely cases when you can have more extension classes, etc. And we also assume that rho is a good conjugate. So one way of saying what this means is that, so you see, if let's say even for GL2, it could be that it looks like a non-split extension just because we have chosen a bad conjugate of it. So a good conjugate is one where if we conjugate by the Borel, you cannot make any stars disappear. So as few of the diagonal entries non-zero as possible, among all B conjugates. Any questions? Well, I mean, you have entries to non-zero. Right, but it could be that, let's say for GL3, I mean, you're just supposed to say where it's identically zero on all elements of the Galois group. So you can ask whether it's ever non-zero for any element in the Galois group. Wait for a moment, maybe it will become... I mean, we use this to make a definition, and then we'll check it doesn't depend on which good conjugate we choose. So, and I mean, if I wanted to sort of give the formal definition, I would have to set up a lot of notation. So basically, I will first give properties, then give examples, and then give a hint of how we define it. So we define pi rho ord. It's an admissible smooth GLNQP representation of finite length. Well, and in general, the problem is we don't have these supercuspidals except for GL1 and GL2. So this representation pi rho that we define is only built out of principal series representations, like in the second case. So each irreducible constituent is a principal series. So it's built out of finitely many principal series representations, just like in this reducible GL2 case. And so here are two properties. First of all, pi rho ord is a direct sum over certain wild group elements, namely those wild group elements such that when you conjugate by them, it's still ordinary. So W inverse rho W is ordinary. And these direct summons we denote by pi ord W. Each of these is built out of finitely many principal series, but each has an irreducible socle, so a unique irreducible subrepresentation. And secondly, because of course in the end we want this not to depend on only depend on the GLN conjugacy class of the representation, if you have another good conjugate, another good conjugate to the Borel and the RG conjugate, then we get the same representation. So that's sort of the least you would want to demand.
Ordinary condition comes with the fixed
Borel. Yes.
So you want that
yes.
Into a fixed Borel.
Exactly.
Because
so
otherwise
no, it's this fixed, it's ordinary for this, yes, for this fixed Borel. I did say upper triangular when I defined ordinary. So now let me give examples, because it's easier to understand the examples than to understand the general definition. The first example, well, the easiest case is if rho is semi-simple, just the sum of characters. In this case, pi rho ord. Well, I mean, every wild group element will still leave this ordinary, so we get just a direct sum of n factorial representations, and each of them is just a principal series. So it's, let me introduce some notation for this now, in order that I don't have to write out epsilons all the time. I will just write chi w1 up to wn, where by this I mean, by definition it is chi w1 epsilon negative n minus 1, chi w2 epsilon negative n minus 2, all the way to chi wn. This is the character of the torus we take, which we induce in the usual way to GLN. And by the genericity assumption, this is an irreducible representation. The second example, if rho, this is for GL3, if we have a good conjugate of this form, by which I really mean there's something non-zero, you can't conjugate this away, you can't make it diagonal. So in this case, there are two other W conjugates which are ordinary. Namely, we could interchange W2 and W3, chi2 and chi3. So then the star just moves to the upper right corner, it's still between chi1 and chi2. Or we could, of course, also interchange, move chi3 all the way to the first entry. And the other three conjugates are lower triangular. And in this case, pi rho ord is defined in the following way. For each of these three conjugates, the unique irreducible subrepresentation is the same principal series we just wrote down in the semisimple case. So, but then there's something above it. So we have int chi 1, 2, 3. But let me write down the circles first, then int chi 1, 3, 2, and then int chi 3, 1, 2. And here, whenever we have this non-split extension on consecutive characters, we the representation we define has another representation on top of it, which has these two interchanged. So when I write something at the bottom, I mean sub-representation or circle. The one at the bottom is the sub-representation. It's a non-split extension. And similarly here on the right, we have one representation on top, which is chi 3, 2, 1. And then I'll write down one more example just to show that in general it gets a little more complicated. So rho, if I will say how we define them. It's maybe not known whether they are unique, just like this. Maybe not written down by anyone. So if we have this one and it's as non-split as possible, you can't make any stars disappear by conjugating by upper triangular matrices. In this case, there are no other wild group conjugates, and so you just get one piece, which at the bottom has 1, 2, 3, 4. But here, sort of, we can interchange any two consecutive characters. And so one thing you could do is, yeah, there are three things you could do. You could interchange 1, 2, 2, 3, or 3, 4. So I'll interchange them in this order. One, two, four, three. But if we interchange one and two, we can also interchange three and four still. So we get two, one, four, three, like this. So in general, you sort of pick a subset of pairs, consecutive pairs, which are disjoint. And you're allowed to make all possible interchanges between them. So for example, if we pick this, these two, we get a corresponding square. In general, we get cubes, hypercubes. So how do we construct this representation? So in some sense, all the extensions come from GL2. So if we look at this example, and if we look at the four outside principal series representation, we can obtain them in the following way, namely by parabolically inducing from the 2-2 parabolic. So int 2-2 to GL4 of, so now we just take a tensor product of an extension for GL2QP in each copy. So in chi12 in chi21, well, normalized by an epsilon to the -2, I think, tensor in chi3 in 3.43, and now the point is this is a uniquely determined representation, because for GL2QP one actually knows the X groups and they're one dimensional. So there's a unique such extension here and here. And similarly, we can you can write down this one by using a 1-to-1 parabolic and then glue them together. So in general, one has a lot of representations like this, and then so plus another, and then take some direct limit of all of them. I mean, you or some push out. So the representation is defined purely in terms of GL2s in some sense. And now, why do we define a representation in this way? So the motivation is the following. So if we go back to n equals 2, when we have the representation pi of rho, Colmez's functor, when we apply F, so this is Colmez, Montreal functor, if we apply it to the representation pi of rho, this gives back rho if it's suitably normalized. So this is an exact functor. And for example, in the case which I now erased, when in the reducible case, when we had an extension of two principal series representations, each of the principal series is mapped to a character and the extension is mapped to the extension. And now, okay, I maybe want a little more space. When n is greater than 2, we wonder whether the following is true. So let me write it down first. Whether f of pi of rho is isomorphic to the following representation. So maybe this comes out of nowhere right now. So lambda wedge 1 of rho, tensor wedge 2 of rho, tensor wedge n minus 1 of rho, 4, a suitable generalization of Colmez's functor. And there's one candidate for this generalization, which was proposed by Schneider and Vinyarov. And I want to introduce a shorthand notation. This representation on the right-hand side, I want to denote by L tensor composed with rho, because really, this is rho composed with a representation of the algebraic group GLN. where L tensor is the tensor product of all the wedge powers of the standard representation, and these are nothing but the fundamental algebraic representations of the algebraic group GLN. And in this way, one can also write down something for other groups, provided. Well, sorry? Yes, thank you. They are unique up to twist, at least on that. So why do we expect something so big? I mean, first of all, clearly it generalizes the case of what one gets in the case when n is equal to 2, because here the first power is just rho itself. But we expect that one has the following. If we apply a generalization of Kolmese's functor to F to a principal series representation as above, so I use the same shorthand notation, then that one gets chi 1 to the n minus 1, chi 2 to the n minus 2, all the way down to chi n minus 1. So this does not seem to be quite known for the Schneider-Winehouse functor, I believe. But there are indications that it might give that. And pi rho. Okay, and now you see that, well, a little combinatorial exercise shows that when you make the n factorial permutations of these characters, chi 1 up to chi n, the corresponding characters, Galois characters, show up as irreducible constituents of this representation. And there's a lot of other stuff. But for various reasons, we do expect all these n factorial principal series to be inside pi of rho, just as for n equals 2, both of the permutations are inside pi of rho. So we do expect that we do expect to get something big. And now our motivation for defining pi rho ord is that it mirrors the, it's motivated by looking at the largest sub-representation on, in this L tensor rho, which is built out of these characters we expect to get from principal series. So including extensions. If there are extensions between such characters inside this big tensor product, then we would expect to come from extensions from between the principal series. So it mirrors the maximal sub-representation of this big tensor product whose constituents No, but here's Galois, in fact. Here's Galois. Yes. Whose constituents are of the form of this form. So chi 1, chi w 1 to the n minus 1, chi w 2 to the n minus 2, all the way to chi w n minus 1, where w is an Sn. And in fact, if I go back to example 2, which is still just above, in fact, I mean, this will not play no more role for the rest of this talk, but I just want to mention that it suggests that pi of rho has the following shape by looking at, I mean, it's just a elementary, I mean, this guess is something elementary to analyze. And, well, much more elementary, and it suggests the following shape. So it suggests that, well, we had this extension of principal series principal series, extension of principal series, and it suggests that there is a supercustodial representation extended with the sixth principal series in the middle. And so pi rho over this is this part. But we don't know any supercustodial representations explicitly for GL3, so we stick with the principal series. Okay. Sorry? Which? This? Well, this would be the, maybe a guess at what you think there should be more? Are you thinking about deformation theory or? Okay, so this is really our this speculation is what motivates our definition of pi rho ord, and so in the remaining part of the talk, I want to give evidence that this does occur inside pi of rho, and this is in the global context in the sort of motivated by the work of Emerton for GL2QP. One can see whether one would expect that this representation pi of rho appears in a for a global when rho arises from a global Galois representation that it appears in the cohomology like we saw in Kelsey's talk also. So I will fix an imaginary quadratic field. So this will be in the setting of unitary groups. So I take F over Q an imaginary quadratic field, and I'm cheating slightly because for technical reasons, I think, well, yes, for several reasons, I think one should really work with some CM extension of a totally real field, but to keep notation simpler, I pretend we can work with an imaginary quadratic field. And G over Q is a unitary group such that, well, okay, I think it's not strictly, I will, yeah. Assume it becomes split over F and quasi split at all finite places and compact at infinity. And assume that P is split in F, in which case the unitary group locally at P is just GLN. So this is important because we really want to see GLN of QP. So for the so we now pick U, a compact open subgroup in the finite abelic points of the unitary group, which is sufficiently small for technical reasons, and which is a product of some group away from P times GLN times a hyperspecial at P, GLN ZP. And then we consider the space of a space of algebraic modular forms, like in Krause's talk. S U upper P little k is the space of locally constant functions from finite abelic points modulo GQ modulo U upper P to k. So in Klaus's talk, this was denoted by a direct limit over levels at P, over shrinking levels at P of H0 Y U upper P U lower P comma K. He had some coefficients as well, but we just keep trivial coefficients. So it's a limit of space of modular forms where you let the level go to at P go to infinity. And then visibly, since we don't mod out by anything at P, we have a right action by GLN QP, which is smooth by this direct limit. And I will not give a precise definition, but there's also a Hecke algebra at places away from P, at good places away from P. And these commute. Yeah, it's even more admissible. Smooth. And now if we start with a global Galois representation, I denote it now by R instead of rho because it's global. So R from GF to GLN K, absolutely irreducible. So in the usual way, when we want to match Galois representations with Hecke eigenvalues by relating eigenvalues of Frobenius or Satake parameters with Satake parameters or eigenvalues of Hecke, we get a maximal ideal in the Hecke algebra. And we conjecture the following. So suppose, first of all, that R is automorphic. In other words, that these Hecke eigenvalues do occur in these spaces of algebraic modular form, so i.e. S U P K M torsion is not zero. So there is a non-zero Hecke eigenspace for M, and locally at P it's sufficiently generic, so it's generic ordinary. Yes. So we assume it's upper triangular, and then we have the genericity condition on the characters chi1 up to chi n that their ratios are not 1 or cyclotomic to the plus minus 1. And then, under these conditions, we conjecture that there exists a positive integer d such that pi r restricted to GQP would normalized by power of the cyclotomic character all to the power d. All the times occurs in this space of algebraic modular forms. And more precisely, I mean, for this I wouldn't need to put any d, but this sort of, for obvious reasons, will land in the largest subspace. Yeah, okay, let me write it down first. So, odds. Yeah, okay, so it lands in the largest subspace, which is built out of principal series representations. And then D is sort of determined by demanding that this should be an essential injection. Essential meaning that you can't put any Well, one way of saying it is any non-zero subobject on the right intersects the left. So in other words, you can't make any, you can't find any complementary direct sum inside. So let me just write down the definition of this word. Oh, maybe I'll. So where the right hand side, so S U P K M ord is the maximal subrepresentation whose constituents are, well, okay, they could be reducible principle series, so subquotients of principle series. Okay, and so shorthand notation, GP will denote GLN QP, KP will denote GLN ZP, and then a stair weight, as this morning, for example, in Benjamin Schrems' talk, sigma, I mean, it's a slight variant, is an irreducible smooth KP representation over our little over our finite field little k. Equivalently, and maybe this is how it appeared in Dave Savitz's talk, it's an irreducible GLNFP representation. It automatically factors through GLNFP. So it's a representation of a finite group, it's finite dimensional. And on the multiplicity space of the stair weight inside cohomology, which I now, I sort of drop the UP and the K from now on, I'll just say S for SUP. Okay? S localized at M, or M torsion, it doesn't really matter, is by Frobenius reciprocity, as this morning, it's the compact induction, which I'll just write little n, KP, GP, sigma 2 as M. So because of Frobenius reciprocity, one sees that the space we care about, which is the left, has an action of the endomorphism algebra, which I denote by H, sigma W, the GP endomorphisms of the compact induction, H sigma. And so some I showed some time ago that this is a polynomial ring with one variable inverted. So it's like the K of T this morning, roughly. And Hom, yes, so there's one more notation, Hom sigma SM ord. Unfortunately, another notion of ordinary, but they're all in some sense related. So now, SM is the space of algebraic modular forms localized at the maximal ideal of the Hecke algebra, of the usual Hecke algebra T. And the ordinary part of it is the largest. So this is a finite dimensional space with an action of a commutative algebra. And the ordinary subspace is the largest subspace on which all the TIs are non-zero. All the TI, all these Hecke operators at T are ordinary. Now I can state the theorem. So assume, first of all, so we have this global Galois representation R from the conjecture up there. We first of all assume that, okay. Yeah, so this, the Galois representation gives rise to the maximal ideal. We assume that Hom sigma SM ord is non-zero for some stair weight sigma. And this just means that the Galois representation occurs in cohomology with weight sigma, and the Hecke eigenvalues are ordinary. So it's ordinarily automorphic. And this implies that locally the Galois representation at P is ordinary by local global compatibility. Maybe by David Garrity in this case. Secondly, we assume that, so it's ordinary, but we assume now it's also generic, but slightly stronger than that. Inertially generic. We assume it's generic, but slightly more. Namely that the same condition as before is true on inertia. For all I not equal to j. And then there are some technical global assumptions, which maybe I will not spell out unless you want me to. So these are assumptions in order to apply modularity results. So then, then there exists integers dw greater than 0, such that so what we want to be true is not quite true, but sorry, is it, should I write it again? So now there's a sum over all the W's. We have the W part of pi ord, and the sum is over the all while group elements as before, so W inverse RGQP W is ordinary, upper triangular, injects in here essentially. So this is the end of the statement of this theorem. Okay. Well, maybe I'll leave this. Okay, so in the remaining time, I want to say something about the proof. So first of all, so one thing that's easy to show is that the KP circle of pi W ord. Maybe I will just, yeah, I will not keep writing R restricted to GQP. So this is a GP representation. It has a unique irreducible KP subrepresentation. It has a unique set weight. So these are irreducible for all W. And among all these W's, they are distinct. This is by the genericity assumption. And then by results of G, Garrity, and Barnett-Lamb, G, Garrity-Taylor, we know that, so we know what their weights in our setting when we have an ordinarily automorphic Galois representation, we know exactly which their weights occur in cohomology. So HOM KP sigma SM ord is non-zero if and only if sigma is one of these sigma W's. So this is a kind of companion forms result for Sayre's conjecture, but now for GLN. So we know about all Sayre weights that occur with ordinary Hecke eigenvalues. And now local global compatibility shows that on this space, so if we fix one of these sigma w's on this multiplicity space of the Sayre-Wittig cohomology, there's a unique set of eigenvalues of our Hecke algebra H sigma w. So there exists a unique set of Hecke eigenvalues, eta w, of this commutative Hecke algebra at P, all the Hecke eigenvalues are in the coefficient field, on Hom sigma w Sm Ort. And this allows us to at least put one principal series into cohomology. Namely, in so the compact induction of this pair with sigma w, which maps to Sm by Frobenius reciprocity. So if we start from a non-zero element over here, which is an eigen, well, if we start with an eigenvector for the Hecke algebra, by Frobenius reciprocity we get such a map, and because of the Hecke eigenvalue, because it's a Hecke eigenvector, we get even, it factors even through this quotient. This is a GP linear map. And the representation on the left-hand side is a principal series representation, which is isomorphic. So this is now something one has to check, that from the definition of pi rho Ort or pi r Ort, that is precisely the lowest, the ones that occur at the bottom of the of pi rho Ort. So I told you there's a unique irreducible principle, unique principal series, which is a subobject of this. And this is the one we get. So at least we get all these for any w. But now the question is, how can we extend from this principal series to sort of this whole, everything that's above. So for us, in example three, we had this, and we only have this so far. And we would need to extend and show that all these other principal series occur on top of it in cohomology. And for this, we use the following key proposition, which is local. Namely, so to emphasize that it's local, let theta be any admissible smooth GP representation such that the following two assumptions are true. Theta restricted to K sub P to the maximal compact is injective. It's an injective representation. And secondly, that maybe I should say that using this picture first. So we have, in this example, we have five principal series which extend with each other. Unique one is in the bottom. Each one of them has a unique Sayre weight. And none of these other Sayre weights occurs in cohomology, only the one at the bottom. So none of the Sayre weights of the Jordan-Hölder constituents of pi w Ort occurs as Kp sub-representation in theta. Well, let's say it this way, except the one of the bottom principal series, sigma w. So this assumption is satisfied in practice because, so if we apply this to cohomology, as I will say in a moment, then this is, the assumption about the Sayre weights is satisfied by the companion forms result. And the injectivity is, this is actually something, this was known before. This is not difficult. This, I'm saying we will apply this to theta equals this representation Sm, which is an admissible smooth GLMQP representation. We apply it to this. The second assumption will be satisfied because I'm not finished stating, but the assumption will be satisfied because of the companion forms result. And this is some general property of cohomology of a compact reductive group. Then the maps from pi w ord to theta, so they restrict to, if we restrict it to the sphere weight of the bottom principal series, we get a KP linear homomorphism from sigma w into theta, which acts by, on which Hecke at P acts by eta w, and this map is an isomorphism. And this we apply with theta equals Sm. And there's one more thing one has to do, because in the statement of the theorem we don't have S localized at M, which is the M generalized eigenspace, but we have M torsion, which is the literal eigenspace. But if we have an isomorphism, we can take M torsion on both sides. Then take, or M eigenspace. So this is exactly what we want, because, I mean, the right-hand side, maybe I could have also written it as homomorphisms from the bottom principal series into theta. Because of this isomorphism, it's the same. Yes?
Are you saying that this M is injective?
As a KP representation.
And it contains this as an essential.
Well, the essential parts, maybe I will not say anything about, but that's not hard. Well, I can say something at the end, but no, but here we have the ordinary part. We have we just have the part that's built out built out of principal series. So where was I? Okay, maybe I. So I have about 3 minutes or something. Okay, so how does the proof work? Well, I can only say something in the remaining time. Well, with 10 minutes it will work, but first of all, the injectivity of this map is easy because of the assumption that none of the other sphere weights occurs in cohomology. Injective is easy by B. And then we, so what the hard part is to go from the sphere weight in cohomology to having the whole thing in cohomology, to extend it. And for that we use ordinary parts of Emerton by recalling how we constructed pi w ord. We constructed it by taking some limit, by gluing certain parabolic inductions. So it's enough to extend it for each parabolic induction individually, because they glue, and because it's a direct limit. And we just fix one of them, and by ordinary parts, we can reduce to the Levy. So reduce to Levy, which is essentially a product of GL2s. So we reduce to a similar statement, to an analogous statement as the proposition, where GP is replaced by a product of GL2s times GL1s, which I leave out, KP, the corresponding maximal compact, pi W ord. If you remember the kind of representation I induced from the Levy subgroup, it was a representation which is of the form E1, E2, up to ED, where each EI is an extension of two principal series for GL2QP. So this representation is some kind of hypercube of 2 to the D principal series representations for the Levy subgroup. And we know that the bottom one occurs in theta, and we need to put the whole thing into theta. And so the key to do it is, we find the so the point is one knows GL2QP very well. One can find a finite dimensional representation which contains exactly, which is built out of precisely the fair weight of each of these two to the D principal series. Use the injectivity to extend from sigma W to this finite dimensional representation of the fair weights. And then, so this generates the whole representation. And then we find a suitable quotient of, so we extend from little int sigma to int capital sigma, which is built out of these fair weights. And then we find a suitable quotient of this, which is a finite length extending the representation we want, which is capital pi, with some representation which, by our assumptions, is forced to be non-ordinary. It doesn't have any principal series inside. And then the result of Pascunas says that there can be no non-trivial extension between any principal series and anything that's not a principal series. So we get a splitting of a suitable quotient of this representation that maps here, and then we get a map from the quotient. I'm sorry, I ran out of time. Because if you don't have QP, if you remember the paper by Brian Pascunas, then what you expect to see is not an extension, even for in the reducible GL2 case, you don't remember an expect an extension of two principal series, but you expect there to be supercustable things in between. So in general, you somehow don't expect many interesting extensions of principal series in cohomology, but there will be more supercustable things appearing in between. And when the principal series at the bottom is not a problem, but the more interesting thing is what's above. And then I think it's essentially, it's not interesting what's above in general. Here?
Yeah.
Oh, because here we have int chi 2143, and here we have int chi 1324. And, okay, I mean, one way of saying it is Matthew Emerton has some very general expectations of X groups between principal series. Okay. Yes? This is the circle. This is the next circle layer, and this is the co-circle. Oh, we drew an edge. I mean, basically, okay. So we only look, I mean, we sort of don't care what's happening here. We look at which stars we have on consecutive characters, and then we are allowed to switch these characters. But, sorry? Oh, the edge means that just the two characters, two consecutive characters are switched, which are related by a star. Oh, okay. I see. Yes, the notation means, but this really tells you the submodule structure diagram. I mean, the submodule of a multiplicity-free representation is determined by a poset, and this is the diagram of the poset. So it tells you exactly what submodules are inside this representation.